You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast. My name is Ollie Allen, bringing you a special episode of the show today, as it is that time of year again. Reading's financial accounts have been released. Last year, we had Kieran Maguire on the show, who's the go-to man for all things football finance, author of The Price of Football book, presenter of The Price of Football podcast, and it's easy to find on Twitter as well if you just search for Price of Football. That show went down really well, actually, last year, and I certainly sort of gained a lot of knowledge from it and found it very, very insightful for what was quite a horrible-looking bank sheet for Reading last year. But I'm delighted to say that Kieran is back on this year. How's it going, mate?
It's ticking over. The numbers from football this year have been even more crazy than ever before as a result of lockdown and the impact that COVID's had on the sport. So never dull. I look forward to a quiet day in football finance, but I've not found one for at least 12 months, sadly.
I was going to say it's probably prime time with all the accounts coming out, but I imagine the last year has been just chaos with the pandemic and everything.
Yes, and you throw into the equation some of the really heartbreaking stuff that has taken place at Wigan Athletic, the lack of progress in terms of Bury, Macclesfield Town being kicked out of existence, shenanigans at Charlton, Wigan, a disaster, which has fortunately now been solved, we hope. And you know, Manchester City's UEFA ban. It's all pretty depressing stuff. It's not the reason why we fell in love with the game.
No, for sure. I mean, it almost puts into context Reading's, I say struggles, but I mean, we were saying off air that sort of some clubs' sort of plights are massive in comparison to Reading, and they sort of almost make Reading look like saints in comparison. But I get the impression that when Reading's accounts come out, they're ones that sort of supporters await with sort of peril, I would say, but other supporters sort of await with interest, because some of the figures that we've seen that the last couple of years have been eye-watering. Were they ones that you were looking out for when they came out today?
Yes. Without wanting to be critical of Reading, you look at those numbers and your immediate reaction is that this is a club that is underperforming given the extent of the commitment from the owners. Clearly you know what's happening on a week-by-week basis in terms of performances. It's a challenging division. Once Reading's parishute payments tapered off, which was in 2017-18, in the last 3 years, the losses have been eye-watering. The club has effectively been losing about £750,000 a week in terms of its day-to-day activities, and that cannot carry on forever.
I mean, let's take a look at sort of the basic figures then from the accounts that came out this morning. The operating loss for 2019-20 was £43 million. That is slightly a slightly bigger loss than last year, which was £40.7 million. It's a total accumulated loss of £138 million. Turnover is slightly down, £17.8 million compared to last year, £21 million. But in general, sort of all of the media and broadcast and sort of the commercial income has largely stayed the same. The wage bill has gone down. That's the one positive, I suppose. It's £33.3 million this year. Last year, it was £36.1 million. That's an awful lot of numbers, Kieran. And sort of for someone who is just sort of hearing all these numbers, me just sort of chucking them out, or possibly they've read them this morning. In the simplest terms, sort of what does this all mean?
I think Reading's done reasonably well to keep the level of money coming through the door up. Ticket sales ultimately fell in 2019-20 because, of course, we went into lockdown in mid-March and therefore there were no ticket sales for the remainder of the season. The club did make more money from the rugby relationship. So that was a one positive. But Reading normally brings in around about £18 million a year in a non-pandemic year. So that they managed to keep that roughly static. The problem is wages. The average wages that Reading are paying are around about 18 grand a week. And you spread that between a squad, and immediately we find that the club is paying more than twice the amount in wages than it's generating in income. So before you stick the floodlights on and pay for the electricity, before the groundsman mows the grass and asks you have to stick petrol in his mower, the club's already lost a huge amount of money. Factor in transfer payments and the way that those are dealt with, and the losses go up and up. Reading were able in the last couple of years to reduce their losses to a degree because they sold the stadium to the owners, and they did some other property related transactions. But you can't keep selling items year in, year out, because you run out of things to sell. And that's the position we found ourselves in as far as 2019-20 was concerned, which explains why the losses are so high.
It was those wages last year, especially that sort of stood out with that record-breaking stat. I think it was 226% of Reading's income was spent on wages last year, which is the highest ever in the Championship. And I think alerted a lot of people outside of Reading's fan base of just quite, you know, not necessarily how bad, but sort of how much money was being spent on those wages. As I say, that has decreased the wage bill this for 2019-20. Down to 221% of income being spent on wages, which is still a huge, huge amount. It is a slight decrease. I mean, are the accounts in better shape this year than they were this time last year? Because we spoke this time last year, and I remember there was just massive, massive concern of what was to come.
I think they're broadly in line with the previous year. If you strip out all of the unusual bits and pieces, Yes, the wage bill has come down, but remember, these accounts go up to the end of June 2020, so therefore they wouldn't have included the player bonuses for match appearances, goals, clean sheets, and so on for those matches which took place in July. So there will be a hangover in terms of wages in the next set of accounts. I think the things that the fan base need to perhaps cling on to is that my understanding that there will be quite a few players out of contract this summer, and it will allow the club the choice of either completely dispensing with the players' commitments and a contribution, or I suspect for some players they might be offered another contract, but it will be on lower terms. Certainly the noises we're hearing from people in the industry is that the level of wages in the Championship isn't sustainable, and as players come to the end of contracts on the back of COVID, there will be a drive to get those costs down. Now, the problem is that some clubs will be more committed to that than others, and we could end up very quickly in a year or two in another arms race, which is the problem that we've had in the Championship over the course of the last decade.
You mentioned it there. I mean, it is important to point out that obviously these accounts are only up to June 2020. So obviously they only take into account around about 3-4 months of the pandemic. And obviously they do also still take into account all of the wages of all the players that left Reading last summer. So the likes of Chris Gunter, Gareth McCleary, Mo Barrow, Vito Minone as well. All of those players sort of signed big contracts in the Ron Gourlay era. So all of those are now out of the club, but still included in this fact sheet. But does it then, in that sense, the fact obviously it's good that those wages are now out of the club, but we aren't quite seeing the impact of the pandemic. Do these accounts, not just for Reading, but for all clubs, are they sort of giving a slightly distorted picture of each club's financial situation at the moment?
Yes, because we didn't actually have a full season to the 30th of June 2020, I think it's probably best to assess the impact of COVID by combining the 2020 and the 2021 figures when they come out this time next year. So all the clubs in the Championship are losing money. That's a given. It's a brutal division. The total losses in 2019, and remember that's before the pandemic, exceeded £600 million. So Reading are not alone. They are not unique. But it is indicative. If you are losing money as a football club, what can you do? You could either sell off assets such as the stadium. You can sell off your best players. But, of course, what we're going to find this summer is that the transfer market is very subdued. It's very much a buyer's market. So the club might have to reduce its asking price. Or you go to the owner, or you go to other lenders and you say, can you give us some money? But it would be a very brave bank who would lend money to a football club in the current economic climate. So therefore, it really does come down to the club owners to dig out the financial deficit that the clubs find themselves in.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, particularly relevant with Reading, where Dai Young has had a massive impact, sort of pumping money into the club. I mean, it is worth it, as I say, you know, you have to look at sort of the cost-cutting measures Reading have put in place over the last year or so that these accounts don't take into consideration. As I say, all of those players came off the wage bill last summer, about 13 or 14 first-team players and academy players left the club last summer. I think Ovie Ajayi was the only player that money was spent on in the transfer window, and of course, no money at all was spent in January. Not even loan players, no one at all came in the January window at all. But yeah, let's get on to Dai Young then, because as I say, he's massively important in all of this. You know, the accounts show the amount of money that he's pumped in to the football club. The accounts this year show that Reading borrowed nearly £38 million from the owners over the last financial year. And they also paid £1.5 million in rent for the stadium, which, as Kieran pointed out earlier, the owners own. They also own the training ground as well. Just how important then is Dai Young in all of this, Kieran? Because Reading obviously owe this money to him. When sort of slash how is that money paid back, or is there not too much emphasis being placed on that at the moment?
There's no indication that he wants the money back. Debt is only a problem if you cannot service it. Now, whilst the loans are interest-free, which is a big plus, then there's no interest cost to have to worry about. You look at some of the clubs in the Premier League, I think West Ham are a classic example. Their owners have taken nearly £20 million in interest from the club since they became involved, you know, about a decade ago. So that is a plus. In terms of repaying the loans themselves, it's not realistic whilst the club's in the Championship. The only way this could potentially be achieved is if Reading are sold and from the sale proceeds, the loans are repaid. But from a fan's perspective, you don't really care. You're more interested in what the new owners are planning to do. Even if Reading are promoted to the Premier League, we are seeing clubs within 12 months go from being profit-making to loss-making in the Premier League. I mean, I'm a Brighton fan. We made a small profit in our first year in the Premier League. And for the last 3 years, we've been losing money hand over fist. So it's not going to get any better in the Premier League should you get there. It's just going to be you're watching a different style of football, you know, a different quality of player. But there's a high chance that the clubs will still be losing money.
I mean, with Dai Young, then, is it sort of a case that Reading can, you know, sort of carry on operating as they are, you know, treading the line, you know, very, very carefully indeed. But sort of as long as Dai Young sticks around, Reading should, I would hope, you know, sort of touch wood, be okay. But the big sort of concern, I suppose, is if he does lose interest, that's when the club might be in trouble.
Yes, if you take a look at the auditor's report, and I appreciate that that's the last thing that any football fan would ever want to do in there under normal circumstances, it does say the auditors, what they refer to as, have a material concern over the club's ability to trade as a going concern. So can it pay its day-to-day bills? No, it can't. So therefore, it is reliant upon Dai Young to continue to underwrite those losses. Now, whilst he's in this present frame of mind, from a financial point of view, I think the club is okay. From a financial fair play perspective, things are probably a bit trickier. My concern would be if we take a look at other owners from the Far East. We know that the owners at West Brom have been trying to sell that club. We know that the owners at Southampton have been trying to sell that club. In terms of what we saw at Aston Villa, they had an owner from the Far East who, for whatever reason, was unable to continue to cover those losses. Aston Villa were within an hour of going out of business, and I don't even mean administration. They were facing liquidation. They were in a horrendous state, and they were very fortunate to be rescued by their owners. We saw activities in respect of Wigan Athletic, who had one owner from Hong Kong who sold to another owner in Hong Kong, who 2 weeks later decided they weren't going to continue to financially support the club, and it went into administration. So the mood music from China is that the government is has lost interest in Chinese corporations investing in European football. So I think many owners are looking for exit routes. Are Reading an attractive proposition? Well, you know, there are pluses in terms of location, stadium, training facilities, and similar items. The negative is, would somebody be willing to pay off Dai Young's loans, which are, yeah, they are over, I think, about £83 million, but they would actually be £100 million. What he actually did, he effectively wrote off £15 million worth of loans in the year by converting them into shares. So would somebody be willing to pay him off? I think there the club would be struggling. We know that Sunderland, which appreciate are in League One, they went for around about £30 million. We've seen Ipswich go for 40. I think Derby, if the Derby deal goes through, and there are lots of question marks over the nature of the potential new owners, Derby are probably going for around about 50. So under those circumstances, would Al Young be able to get his £80 million plus back? I think it would be a struggle. So would he be willing to write off some of the debt? I think that would be the key question to ask.
I think the big thing with Dai Young is that he, you know, I'd imagine, like most owners, is just desperate to get to the Premier League. And we've seen, you know, the amounts of money that he's pumped into the club over the last 4 years. And my worry is, as a fan, I suppose, is that, you know, that the longer it goes on, that Reading don't get into the Premier League. And, you know, the last couple of weeks have made this season look fairly unlikely for promotion. Is that how long, you know, sort of can he keep interest? And I'd imagine sort of the FFP regulations are frustrating for him as well, because he's clearly got an awful lot of money and is willing to spend it, as we've seen the last couple of years, but simply can't because of these FFP regulations. And sort of that's where we'll head now, because that is always the buzzword whenever the accounts come out, is financial fair play. Just quickly, sort of, Kieran, what is sort of the latest with relation to these FFP rules, sort of in terms of the pandemic? I remember speaking last year, and there was sort of no one really sort of quite knew what was going to happen with the EFL in terms of stuff like that. I mean, is there a chance that sort of rules might be relaxed, or sort of there are considerations taken in the next couple of years with regards to FFP?
Yes, it looks as if, and remember, I think people get a little bit confused about the EFL and the clubs. The EFL are merely the civil service of football. So they don't actually make the rules. It's the club owners who vote on financial fair play in terms of the limits. And it looks as if the position we are in is that 2020 and 2021 will be combined into a single assessment period. And what clubs will be able to do is that any money that they've lost as a result of COVID, so that would be match day income, potentially some TV income, potentially some advertising and hospitality income, and things of a similar nature, you can get an allowance for those. If you've incurred specific COVID costs, so for example, we've got testing costs. If Reading are going to an away fixture, it could be that the players have to travel on two coaches instead of one in order to achieve social distancing items, then those will be taken into consideration as well. And a final assessment will be made. So that there is some dilution of the rules, but my understanding is that there is not going to be an elimination of the rules, because what the clubs in the EFL feared is that you do have some individual owners who are incredibly wealthy. And if we said that for 2020-21 there was going to be no FFP at all, they would have gone into the transfer market, spent £100 million last summer with a view to trying to get players in to drive through promotion. So I think for Reading, if we take a look at the pre-tax loss over the last 3 years, that was £93 million. Now, you're only allowed to lose 39. You can make some adjustments, but even so, I think Reading will find this year a challenging one from a financial fair play perspective. It was noticeable in the small print to the accounts that although Reading spent nearly £16 million in the 12 months to the 30th of June 2020 signing players, the footnotes said that since then they've not spent a penny on new signings, but also I think from a disappointing point of view that they've not received any money from player sales either. So this is indicative of a transfer market which has really it's become very sticky. Those players who are on good contracts won't want to move on because they'll be offered less money elsewhere, and good players potentially can't be sold because the asking price isn't being matched by potential bidders. So the opportunity and the ability of clubs to escape from financial fair play issues through player sales is proving to be very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I think Reading and Dayong would certainly be in that group of clubs who, if there was no FFP rules, would quite frankly go all out in an attempt to get to the Premier League. I think Reading would absolutely no doubt be in that group of teams. You mentioned that £93 million loss there compared to the £39 million you're allowed to lose. Am I right again? That's the 3 year rolling average that the EFL sort of still judge FFP based on.
That's right. So under the EFL profitability and sustainability rules, but we still all refer to it, of course, as FFP. That's what we grew up with. You're only allowed a £39 million loss. Now, you're allowed to do some technical issues such as making adjustments for infrastructure costs, academy costs, and so on. But even so, that's not going to bring it down from 93 to 39 very easily. So, it's tough times. Reading have sold the stadium, and that's included in those £93 million worth of losses. They've sold other property as well. The numbers don't look fantastic. And clearly, we're aware that the club has been subject to transfer embargoes and has been told by the EFL that it's got to follow a cost-cutting project. And I suspect that's being monitored very carefully by the EFL authorities.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose sort of the big question a lot of people on Twitter have asked is sort of how close are Reading to a possible points deduction? Because we've seen in the last couple of years, you know, Birmingham City, Sheffield Wednesday, both been on the end of points deductions from the EFL. But I think it'd probably been about 10 years before that, since the last Championship club at least. Got a points deduction. How close might Reading be to this? As you say, we've been under these sort of soft embargoes. The EFL are keeping a very, very close eye indeed on Reading's finances. Is there a danger of a points deduction perhaps next season?
I think the one thing that Reading have got in their favour is I don't think there's any desire from the clubs in the EFL for their fellow clubs to end up with points deductions, because we could end up with 8 or 9 clubs being on the receiving end of this, which means from a sporting integrity perspective, it would make a nonsense of 21-22 as a season. And ultimately, we go along to football, and football is an attractive proposition to broadcasters and everybody else that is connected with the game, with a view to having at the start of August a table which everybody starts on an equal and even keel. If you've got one club, as we did have with Sheffield Wednesday this season, being penalised, that's okay. If there are many clubs, it will simply make a mockery of football as a sport for next season. So that's why I suspect that there won't be any profitability and sustainability points deductions for the forthcoming season. And what the EFL will do is that they'll say, we will assess you over 2 years, and then we'll take your losses for 21, your losses for 22, and halve them, and then use that as the basis of the 3-year assessment. So, you know, things will be really challenging in 12 months' time.
I mean, the fact that you're saying that possibly that the 8 or 9 clubs, you know, might be sort of eligible, if you like, for a points deduction, sort of suggests that you know, this championship business model, you know, is, as we've seen in the last couple of years, just becoming increasingly unsustainable, really. I mean, is it a case of clubs now sort of trying to balance that risk of that they are willing to sort of put so much money into the club and sort of spend an awful lot of money, you know, sort of because the reward is so big, and sort of, you know, getting to the Premier League can be very financially lucrative. And we've had a question from Jordan Cotter, who says, are there any examples of established championship clubs with comparably low income that operate at a sustainable level of wage to income percentage, or is it sort of accepted that sort of clubs will always sort of struggle to get to an acceptable sort of percentage of income to wages?
I would suggest that there's none, really. I mean, QPR are actually quite good these days, but, you know, they themselves did have financial penalties not too long ago as a result of FFP breaches. Hull have always operated fairly well, but they were rewarded last season with relegation. The one thing that we see in the Championship is that we learn nothing from previous experience. When the ITV digital broadcasting deal collapsed in what was around about 2003, everybody says, well, we've been spending too much money, we're going to learn from this. Lasted about 6 months. When we had the 2007 2008 economic crash, which impacted globally, everybody said at the time, this will affect football clubs, they'll have to retrench. No sign of it. Football never learns when it comes to applying common sense in terms of its finances. And part of me likes that, because as somebody that messes around with financial numbers all the time, I go to football to escape. And I take the view that the owners must presumably be paying these amounts of wages because they can afford to do so, and are therefore on that basis, perhaps we're okay. If it was any other business, I'd be absolutely terrified. But because football club owners do not operate the clubs with the aim of maximising profits, their aim in the main is to achieve things on the field of play, then we will continue to sustain this level of losses. If we take a look at the last 8 years of the Championship, in 7 of those 8 years, wages exceeded revenue. And the 1 year that it didn't, it was 99%, which was, you know, as good as being there as you could expect to be.
How big a reward then is Premier League football? I mean, you mentioned earlier that when Brighton went up, You know, they made a profit in their first year, but made losses ever since. I mean, we are seeing an increasing sort of number of championship clubs, as you mentioned, you know, almost willing to risk everything in order to get to that Premier League.
The reward is more non-financial than financial, in the sense that if we take a look at the 17 clubs have published their financial results in the Premier League to date, the total losses have been £1.1 billion. And we're talking, you know, Manchester City got to, what was it, the last eight of the Champions League. They were runners-up in the Premier League. They won a domestic cup competition. They lost 160 million quid. Chelsea lost over 100 million quid. Everton lost over 100 million quid. So there's an arms race in both the Premier League and the Championship. Those clubs who have ambitious owners spend more money on players and wages because they want to qualify for the Champions League. So they will try to break into the existing cartel. Those clubs who are in the bottom half of the table are terrified at the prospect of relegation, so they spend a load of money as well. It's only when you've got a club that isn't bothered about getting relegated that they manage to make a profit. That club was Norwich City last season. They were promoted in 2018-19. You know, they played good football in the Championship. They came up. They didn't spend a dime on new players. And they said, thanks very much. We'll have a bit of fun in the Premier League, take the parachute payments and try to retrench back in the Championship this season. And that model seems to be very successful. So if you do get promoted, there's a case for saying, don't even try to stay in the Premier League. Just go there for a bit of fun and giggles. Get the odd victory here or there, a few nice days out, get relegated, and then perhaps try to get a more sustained approach to getting back into the Premier League on the back of relegation.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I am very jealous of the way that Norwich are run at the moment. And certainly, I think I'd always advocate, I think, you know, there'll always be people who say, you know, this team's not ready for the Premier League in sort of terms of that they're not good enough. And, you know, that you know, claim has sort of been lobbied at Reading the last couple of years in 2017 when we got to the playoff final, and this year as well, when sort of people have said if we go up we'll get battered every week. But I think for me, you have to look at the basis, the financial basis it can give you, even if you come straight back down. And yeah, we might well see that again this season. But then yeah, let's look to the future then, which might be Reading getting into the Premier League. As I say, has looked increasingly, unfortunately, unlikely over the last couple of weeks. 5 points away from the playoffs now, with five games to play. Anything could still happen, of course. But let's presume that Reading don't get up to the Premier League this season, stay in the Championship. What's going to have to happen this summer? As I say, you know, these accounts don't take into account the last year. So there have been cost cutting measures over the last year, which I'm sure will have helped. But you mentioned it earlier, Kieran, that sort of the big thing is selling players, because Reading have historically the last, you know, 4 or 5 years been absolutely terrible at getting fees for players. I think I wrote a piece about it last year, and I'll plug it in the description for anyone who does want to go and read it. But the amount of money that we've got in for players is almost non-existent. And you look at, you know, stuff like John Swift, who I think Sheffield United bid about 7 or 8 million for him last summer, and Dae Jong just flat out refused. The same goes for Liam Moore a couple of years ago, when Brighton bid about 10, 11 million for him. And again, Dae Jong just flat out refused. Reading have got to start getting money in summer. As you say, you know, they've sold the stadium to the owner. They've sold the training ground to the owner. The only sellable assets left are the playing staff.
You're absolutely right. If we take a look at the last four seasons for Reading, they've spent £52 million on players and they've received in return 15. So you've got a net spend there of, what, you know, £37 million to add on to the issues in terms of wages. It is possible to have a player development model in that division. I think everybody admires Brentford and what they've managed to achieve, but they have shown that it can be done. But sometimes you need the right people in the right positions at the club to allow that type of viewpoint of a football player as a commodity to be traded at a profit to be part of the overall strategy of the club. And I don't think that's the case at Reading.
No, absolutely not. As we've seen, the flat-out refusal to sell John Swift, sell Liam Moore, the Danny Loader example springs to mind as well, when he was set to move to Wolves, for probably about £3 or 4 million. But again, Dion pulled the plug and he ended up leaving on a free transfer the following summer. I mentioned Brentford in that article, that sort of their model. You know, I'm very, very jealous of it, because yes, they sell players every summer, but they always seem to bring in excellent players. You know, they sold Ollie Watkins last summer. They bring in Ivan Toney, and it's a like-for-like replacement. So, if we can try and replicate that sort of model, but again, I think with Dayong in charge, that might seem unlikely. This summer, you did mention it earlier that hopefully we'll see some big earners go out of the club. Sam Baldock and Sonny Luca, both of their contracts are up this summer. They were both signed on big wages under Ron Gourlay. But am I right, Diggins, that probably wouldn't show up until 2 years' time, because they won't show up until the accounts at the end of 2022?
That's correct. Absolutely, yeah. Spot on. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, we'd have to wait a couple of years to see the full impact again of sort of, you know, what happens with Reading's accounts in that sense. The future of FFP, then, we've spoken about it a lot, and as I say, that it is the buzzword. We've got these profit and sustainability rules, but again, the buzzword is FFP. We've seen the last couple of weeks the news that UEFA are set to get rid of their FFP rules. Could similar happen in the EFL?
Yep, all that it requires is 16 votes, because the EFL is ultimately a members club. So if the members vote to change and to achieve that, you need a two-thirds majority. You're looking at 16 clubs in the Championship. And remember, six clubs in the Championship change every season. So just because owners voted against it in 2021, it could be that, you know, by the time we get to autumn, they might realise that we do need a different model. We've certainly seen noises from clubs such as Stoke City, who, of course, they are funded by Bet365, saying, why can't we spend as much money as we want? We could do in any other business. You know, they don't see the logic behind it. The reason why financial fair play was introduced in the first place was to try to reduce the excessive spending in terms of talent, because football is a talent industry, in terms of wages and player signings. The frightening thought is that we've got this level of losses with FFP. What would the losses be like without it? Even I, who enjoys a number with lots of zeros following it, would be quite scared.
Yeah, I mean, look, as I say, you know, Reading would certainly be one of those clubs if the rules were scrapped to go all out. But I think, look, you have to say that those rules are there for a reason. They are there to save clubs, I'd imagine. And that we've spoken about the possibility of a points deduction and stuff like that. And you know, just sort of to wrap it up, it is clear that these accounts again show Reading in a very precarious position. And as I say, you know, we'll have to, you know, every year now that we'll have to keep a close eye on sort of the numbers coming in, and hopefully, you know, sort of the club do carry on with these cost cutting measures. Again, I'm not too sure the likelihood of that is with Dayong, if he's got the right people around him. You know, he needs to realise, I suppose, that the club can't carry on operating as it is. And as I say, you know, hopefully the wages carry on going down. The last year has been, for me, very, very promising in terms of transfer activity. As I say, Ovie Ejaria, the only one who came in for a transfer fee. And we've seen the success that free agents can have. You know, Josh Laurent is a contender for player of the season. He was signed on a free transfer. So if we can, you know, dig out more gems like that, then hopefully the future you know, might begin to look a little bit brighter than it has done the last couple of years financially. But Kieran, thank you very much for joining me this year. Your insight has been invaluable as always.
Thanks very much for the invite, Ollie, and everybody stay safe. And as a Brighton fan, I'm sorry things haven't worked out with Sam Baldock. He was really good for us. That's all I can say.
I think he's probably about 33 years old now. I think he's lost all of his pace, which I think he always used to rely on pretty much. But I remember him scoring against us in the season you went up, I think.
Yeah.
And then he's not even had a shot this season, probably. He comes off the bench for the final 5 minutes or so. And I mean, but I think to be fair, against Watford, he did a better job than Lucas Jow did in half an hour. So there we are. Yes. Mark will be back with the main podcast after the Cardiff game, a huge game again for Reading, as we say. Promotion to the Premier League is looking increasingly unlikely, but you know, this game on Friday against Cardiff, a huge affair. Reading 5 points outside of the top six with 5 games to go. We host Cardiff City on Friday night. As I say, Mark will be back with a podcast after that, looking back on win, loss or draw. But until then, stay safe and come on, you Ars.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.